Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. Tom Fairbanks, my buddy, engineering and producing our program. We keep him on the other side of the glass. Oh, no, that just happens to be where the control room is. Tom Fairbanks. Tom, we had the hottest day in recorded history in the month of April. Excuse me, month of March yesterday. So
it felt more like April.
It did. It did. It's kind of like we've jettisoned the spring season and are not going to.
But we've had mid-90s earlier than this date, so.
Yeah, we have. That's true. Yeah, so it's backed off a little bit, 90 today, and then into the weekend back into the 80s, which feels very nice to me, the 80s. Wednesday, the 26th of March, 2025, Buckmaster is in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios, at the Bustos Media Center. And we're in central Tucson. We've got five radio stations now under one roof. They're all doing well. This is the news talk station of the five. It's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice. For Trusted News Talk, we're in our 15th year now with our radio program. We have our worldwide live listening at my website, buckmastershow.com, and of course, kvoi.com. You can always stream the program there as well. Our telephone interviews, when we do those, and today we will not be doing telephone interviews, but the live line is always open during the show at 790-2040. That is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Get the ball rolling today with Dr. Zach Guido. We try to bring Zach in, depending on his travel schedule, try to bring him in about once a month. He's our Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. Dr. Guido is an assistant research professor at the University, at the Arizona Institute of Resilience, known as AIR, coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the University of Arizona campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water, resources, and beyond. Hey, Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me again.
Before we talk about the hurricane season, we have a new forecast out and the abnormally warm, I kind of hate to say hot so early in the year. We're not even 3 months into the year. I do want to say that you being in the, you're a climate scientist, and it is difficult, your profession right now. There's no two ways about it. Not only at the University of Arizona, pretty much all research universities in the eyes of the administration are basically suspect.
Yeah, I don't know what the right word is, but it's a moment in time like I've never experienced before. And I've been at the university since 2008, so, you know, 15, 18 years, something like that. Yeah, I think the research enterprise, I mean, there's a lot of things going on. You know, for me in particular, you know, my work is international related. So I focus on climate here in the Southwest, but most of my research, you know, I work in Africa, Asia,
you worked in Jamaica,
Caribbean. Yeah. And, you know, international, as you know, most people will know, is not at the top of the list for this administration. I mean,
no, it's foreign aid cut back to what, 90%?
Yeah.
And your work, whether it be in Bangladesh, Africa, Jamaica, is really about trying to improve the lives, the local people's lives, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's part of it. And, you know, I had a USAID grant that was terminated. It was a 3-year project, had like 15 investigators and graduate students on it from the University of Arizona. And the irony is the whole project was set up to improve the efficiency of where humanitarian assistance was going. So we were working in Kenya and Bangladesh to develop new ways of monitoring the impact, in part to, you know, help programmatic decision making for where to best fund most effective use of resources.
So it really was about efficiency.
It was about efficiency.
That's the ironic thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, like, you know, and the other part of that is like, you know, the real motivation is how does the U.S. how do we as taxpayers you know, contribute to the well-being, help prop up the well-being of the global commons, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think for USAID that was dismantled. I mean, if you think about it, like what would most people think would be sort of an accepted level of donation from the more fortunate to the less fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you think of it like that, I mean, USAID's budget mm-hmm. was 1%.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if you think about like what you're calling on yourself to do, you know, donate to causes, whether mm-hmm. it's animal causes or, you know, food causes or whatever,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think, you know, 1% is not that much. Yeah. So, and the money goes a long way. And we could spend an entire
sure.
session talking about this, but it's, I mean, it affects me personally in a bad way, but it also affects a lot of people that I know and a lot of people that depend on the resources.
You know, you bring up something very interesting. What is that point? What is that price point that Americans are willing to say that they are going to help others?
Yeah, you know, I think if you frame the question like that, like what is our level of responsibility just as humanitarians to the rest of the world? And I think most people would probably say it was a little bit more than 1%,
mm-hmm.
or at least 1%. I bet you. I don't know. I've never heard that framing and numbers associated. But, you know, I do think that there's, I mean, listen, in USAID foreign assistance, humanitarian assistance is a drop in the bucket to the federal budget.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. I'd be curious.
And is there inefficiency? Yes, there's
absolutely
inefficiency,
yeah,
of course, in any agency, in any business. It's everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you started this a little bit asking about universities more in
yes.
general. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I do think another big uncertainty right now is just where research is, the place that research is going to have at large universities. And, you know, there's talk about reducing the government's commitment to, you know, health sciences and the National Science Foundation. And if there is a substantial reduction in funding, where does the money come from for these public institutions? I mean,
mm-hmm.
sure, there's public sector money, but not nearly as much. And, you know, if the National Science Foundation reduces it, you know, its budget by, you know, 50%, which is, you know, some of the numbers that are being thrown out there, then, you know, a lot of programs will suffer. And, you know, maybe it's not the NASA, the optical sciences, the you know, some of the engineering
and maybe defense-related stuff.
Defense-related, but you know, I worry about like anthropology and
mm-hmm.
geography
mm-hmm.
and other kinds of research that's important for informing the ideas and
mm-hmm.
how we think about things,
mm-hmm.
but maybe can't generate an immediate return on investment. So
mm-hmm.
it's a very uncertain time.
Very, very much so. Dr. Zach Guido is with us. Zach is an assistant research professor at the University of Arizona in their program called AIR, the Arizona Institute for Resilience. Too darn hot yesterday, Zach. Oh, my gosh.
What was it, 96, I think?
Yeah, in Phoenix, I think. 99 in Phoenix? I don't know if they hit 100. But I do know Marana hit 100 yesterday. So officially at the airport, into the upper 90s here at the Tucson Airport, and I think Phoenix, I want to say 99. Tom's going to check on that for us. But they were certain. It was the hottest day in March in Arizona since they began keeping records in the 1890s.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I sent myself a graphic of the temperature, and I didn't. But
mm-hmm.
Let me see if I can't think mm-hmm. about the numbers here. And I think we're the second warmest on record so far through this winter season. So it's been really, really warm. Not every month, you know, since October. Let's say, you know, if you think about October being the start of the winter, it's sort of gone hot, cold, hot, average, hot, average, hot.
Right. By the way, they missed 100 by 1 degree. It was 99 for the official. But go ahead, Zach.
Yeah. It's also been extremely dry. Like, I think at the Tucson airport, it's in the driest year on record is in play. So I think right now we're at 0.9 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And the driest year on record is 1 inch. So, mm-hmm. you know, if we, and it's possible,
what are we talking
we
about?
Anything.
What period here from August of, or no, when are we? What?
From October 1 through
today. October 1
today.
To
yeah.
today. I know we were at the lowest
yeah.
Going into February 1st, but and here we are almost the end of March, and we had a little bit of rain, I think, up at our place at the Buckmaster Bungalow. We did have about a half an inch of rain a couple of weeks ago, but it is extremely dry, isn't it, Zach?
Yeah, it's historically dry. I mean, like I said, it's in play for the driest on record. So, I mean, if you look at the winter for Tucson, let me just call this up here. We basically had a little bit of rain early on in October,
right.
And then there was a protracted dry period, and we didn't see much rain. And you know, we've gotten a few at the airport. You know, the foothills and at top of Mount Lemmon, the higher elevations tend to fare a little bit better. But, you know, we're running, it's been, you know, on average, we tend to get about 6 inches of rain in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're less than an inch right now. So what are we? We are, 0.91 at the airport as of yesterday. You know, a few small storms blew in late January, sort of mid-February, then nothing for about a month. And then early to mid-ish March, there was some storms that blew in, at the airport didn't amount
to much. Well, that's the one that we got a little bit in the foothills, yeah. Which was so welcome. But we really, we're in a dry 20, 25-year period anyway. And now this is putting an exclamation mark on the drought, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, on average at the airport, there's something like 26 days of rain between October 1 and the end of April. So we still have
26.
A little bit of time. Yeah, we've had 7 so far at the airport.
Oh.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's probably going to end up in, you know, the top 5, if not the driest on record. And that's going to put a lot of pressure
On
the monsoon season.
Which is so difficult, as we talk about with you every visit. It's so difficult to kind of predict what's going to happen with
interestingly,
summer storms.
A recent forecast came out by NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, that actually does have enhanced chances for above average rainfall this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I was actually trying to understand, what are they seeing?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not easy... It's not easy to figure that out. Like, there's a lot of different tools that these forecasters use.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, dynamical weather prediction models. There's relationships between sea surface temperature patterns and precipitation. There's correlation analysis. So they're looking at a suite of these tools and then making a forecast based on all of them. So it's hard to figure out what is driving.
It's interesting. I saw that graphic, and it's like a camel's hump right over, like, from the border Nogales
Correct.
Up to Phoenix, and then very little to the sides. But we're in this area. I don't know what they must have seen.
Well, that's it. I mean,
maybe the map was wrong. They got it wrong.
Well, I don't think they
hit the wrong button or something.
Yeah.
Because it did show above average precipitation.
Yeah. It technically shows increased chances. So there's a slight increase in the odds. So if you were to flip a coin, you know, there'd be a slight increase in chances that it would be above average. But I take these forecasts, as we've talked about almost every monsoon season, mm-hmm. with a huge grain of salt, only because it's extremely difficult to forecast something like the monsoon that has high seasonal variability.
With the winds, it's basically depending on the wind. That's, I think, monsoon is an Arabic word for wind.
Correct. And it is a function of this regional feature, this high pressure system that moves northward as the sun angle gets higher. And that actually changes the direction of the winds and changes where we're in a favorable situation if that high pressure moves to our north of Tucson, for getting in moisture from the south, from Mexico.
All right, we'll take a break right here. What's coming up with the hurricane season? That forecast from AccuWeather, just released at about 10 o'clock this morning, between 10 and 11 our time. So it's hot off the press. We'll get Zach's update on that right after the break. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. It's our midweek edition, the final Wednesday of the month of March. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Zach Guido is here, Dr. Guido, an assistant research professor at the University of Arizona. His specialty, climate science. And Zach, the AccuWeather people put out their, I guess NOAA, the National Weather Service, will then put out their own. Mm-hmm. But this one, it's kind of like when, before football season begins, you get some of, you know, different groups making predictions.
Right. And there's a lot of them, actually.
Yeah, there's a bunch. So this one, 2025, 13 to 18 named storms, 10 expected to become hurricanes. Of that, half could be Cat 3, or above, and 3 to 6 could impact the United States. Does that sound to you generally about average?
I think it's on the above average side of things.
Oh.
Yeah, so the average for named storms for the 30-year period between 1991 and 2020 was 14.5. So those include tropical storms and minor and major hurricanes. And then when you just look at the hurricanes, so category 1 through 5, that a little bit more than 7. So this forecast is for 10. And then major hurricanes, the strongest hurricanes are on average a little over 3.
Yeah, and this one said 3 to 5.
Yeah.
So they kind of hedged there.
So it's slightly above average. So is that an AccuWeather article reporting on NOAA's forecast, or is that AccuWeather's? Do you know if that's AccuWeather's?
I am going to go out on a limb. I looked at several reports, and I did not see any NOAA quoted in any of them. So I'm going to, I think it's AccuWeather's meteorologists doing their annual report.
Yeah, I think it's a little early for NOAA.
I think so too.
You know, so there are a number of groups that do this, like Colorado State.
Oh, yeah. They have a great
University of
meteorology school, right? Yep. Up at CSU, in Fort Collins.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of people have gotten the business of projecting, obviously, because it's, you know, such an important thing to prepare for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and last year, if we remember, last year the forecasts were for exceedingly high, like almost record-setting hurricane activity, in part because the oceans were so warm there. This just came out today, so I didn't actually prepare for it. So I haven't actually looked at what like the sea surface temperature patterns in the Atlantic are looking at. But there's a few drivers of it. And obviously the energy and warm ocean temperatures is one of the main factors. So
now the Pacific side, I haven't seen any information on that, but I do know that I read that south of the equator, because of course we're coming out of the active monsoon season below the equator and in the South Pacific, they've had a below average year for hurricanes. So
last year,
the season that we're just coming out of, because they're going into the winter season.
Right.
So this would be like, for us, this would be like October, this north of the equator.
Yeah.
This would be like October, November.
And that might make sense. So yes. there was a sort of weak La Nina, cooler than average sea surface temperatures. I haven't looked too much into that, but and this year, as we're heading into the summer, again, we have this sort of waning, as is typical, changing sea surface temperatures in the tropical Pacific. So we were in this La Nina, which was in part what drove the dry conditions here in the Southwest. And we're going to likely move into a neutral conditions for the summer period. And then we'll have to see what happens later on in the winter. But when there's not sort of a strong El Nino or La Nina signal, that can also influence the hurricane forecast, because one of the things that matter is not only the sea surface temperatures that sort of add energy and evaporation and moisture to the storms, but the circulation, the El Nino and La Nina, can affect the differential wind speeds in the atmosphere, causing shear. And when you have increased shear, you can actually rip storm formation. You can stunt it, if you will. You can prevent it from sort of rip it apart before it actually gets going and forms a big storm. So if you have less shear, then you have less likely chances for there to be an active hurricane season.
Here's a question I've been curious about. So the sea surface temperatures, how do we know in these very remote areas of the Atlantic and Pacific, what do they drop kind of an instrument into the Pacific?
Yeah, so there's a number of ways that they monitor it. Yeah, you have actual buoys that are set up. There's not a lot of them.
Okay.
So there's buoys that help monitor the temperatures. And you have like ocean-going boats that drop devices that record the temperature. And we also have satellites that can
I don't know how easy, but they would read the sea surface temperature?
Yep. They can read the sea surface temperature, of course, like different kind of instrumentation picks up different things, like cloud covers would obstruct, I think, some of them. But, you know, there's been, you know, 30, 40 years of good satellite data that have then allowed the instruments to be calibrated to find those relationships between actual measurements and what they're seeing from space. And so you can get a pretty accurate accurate reading on sea surface temperature. So you assimilate all of those things together. And there are places in the world where we have more data than others. Mm-hmm. And so you have more confidence in those places than others. But obviously, like in these areas that are known places to drive sort of the global atmospheric circulation, like the tropical Pacific Ocean, where we monitor La Nina events and El Nino events, there's more emphasis and more ability to sort of figure out what's going on there with sea surface temperatures.
Just like with cell phones, there are dead zones in this country, and anybody that's traveled some of our more remote mountain areas, they won't get a great signal. You get the same thing, I guess, in the oceans.
Well, you know, this is one of the things that climate scientists, you know, spend a lot of their time on. It's like there's not complete instrumentation. I mean, we would want there to be a lot more data than there actually is. So part of the work is trying to quantify the uncertainty and try to calibrate and try to make as accurate as possible estimates.
All right, Dr. Zach Guido. Zach, I hope you have a great month. We'll see you in about a month. Thank you, sir.
All right,
take a break. It's the mid-show break in our midweek edition of Buckmaster. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun, covering your hometown.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Head over to Green Things. You're going to really enjoy it. They're located at 3284 East River Road, and they've got that wonderful sale going on at Zocalo Village. Zocalo Village, there's really, it's a rare opportunity for folks to purchase one-of-a-kind handcrafted Mexican art and furniture up to 50% off. We're calling it the teardown sale. They have three of their restored historic buildings must be vacated and torn down to meet federal floodplain regulations. So why not just put the stuff up for sale and make it attractive enough so rather than the folks at Green Things having to move all the merchandise over to the new building, let the consumer have a great opportunity to get some wonderful buys. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We try to get him in once a month, and been pretty good about that lately. Lieutenant General Jeffrey Buchanan, retired, three-star retired general. Nearly 40 years in his Army career. He decided to retire in 2019. Great to see you, General.
Yeah, thanks. Bill, it's always an honor to be on your
show. Why
did
you decide to retire in 2019?
It was it was time to go. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, I loved my time in the Army. I loved the mission.
You were ROTC, weren't you?
I was, yes, sir. Yeah. University of Arizona, Bear Down.
Yeah, but you just felt this would, you know.
It was time to go. You know, frankly, I had missed all three of my kids' senior years in high school. Mm-hmm. And I had my first, each of my kids had a grandchild by 2019. And I decided I wanted to be able to spend more time with grandkids than I had with my own kids.
Did you ever figure out how many duty stations you had?
I'll tell you, my wife and I, in 37 years in the Army, we moved 26 times.
What was that?
26 moves in my 37 years. So done with it.
Oh, my goodness. You have been, and you were very active, yet you commanded 6,000 troops on the southwest border, led a military operation in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria, and you did four tours over in the Middle East, in Iraq, and then you did one in Afghanistan. And as you mentioned, you're a product, local guy, product of the ROTC program from the University of Arizona. Now, not only with your Army career, you've very active with Arizona Game and Fish. In fact, you're one of the five commissioners on the board for Arizona Game and Fish. And you try to stay active in your home county, which is the smallest county in Arizona, but I think one of the most diverse geographically, geologically. It's a pretty county, Santa Cruz County, where you're a volunteer deputy sheriff. So we've got some news on the game and fish front, and your organization now, last report, is offering up to $1,000 reward, General, for information leading to the arrest in a case of multiple species found dead near the Pantano Wash. What is going on over there? You've got dead coyotes, javelinas, domestic dogs, a raven.
So I'll tell you what, you know, first of all, I don't know the details of all the investigation, but my initial information is it appears that somebody's been putting out poison bait.
Oh, boy.
And all kinds of different animals are eating that. And obviously that's both illegal and immoral, you know.
No kidding.
So we hope to catch a perpetrator and bring them to justice.
Yeah, and let me just give folks a little more information about the location, because maybe some listeners can kind of keep an eye out over in that area. It's a wash. These poisoning incidents have been along the wash between Houghton and Old Spanish Trail. So that's the location over there. We had a rabies bite.
Sure
too,
did.
Didn't we?
Yeah.
What was that about?
Recently, some of our listeners may not know what a coati or coati mundi is.
Uh huh.
It's a member of the raccoon family, and if you think about something that's about the size of a raccoon, maybe a little taller, skinnier,
bushy,
and longer.
Bushy tail.
No, it's got a long, skinny tail that's held upright. It's striped, but it...
Tom, put that up on the screen for me if you could, so I can get a picture of this.
They obviously are carnivores, like raccoons, and in this case, are omnivorous. They'll eat, you know, small mammals, birds, insects, frogs, but also, you know, plants and things once in a while. Oh. They run in packs, and they are native to this part of Arizona and really up to about the middle part, even up in the northern part of our state. Mm. I used to see them a lot down in Panama.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, I was 15 in the Huachucas, rappelling in the mountains with another friend of mine, and we had a rabid coati mundi come up and jump on my friend's back and bite him.
What?
And he ended up getting the full rabies treatments. And this was back in the 1970s. I know we just had an incident with the rabid coati mundi attacking somebody's vehicle and then biting them on the leg. And I'm assuming that they're going to have to get the treatment as well. So really the message is anytime you see an animal, especially a wild animal, behaving, you know, abnormally, losing fear, these kinds of things, it certainly could be rabid, and you want to exercise extreme caution. Most common, you'll see this behavior, rabid rabidity in carnivores, like raccoons, foxes, coyotes, bobcats, or coati mundis, but they can appear in other orders of mammals as well.
Would it be prudent to alert hikers right now?
Oh, absolutely.
Our listeners, I know we have some very rabid rabid. That's not the right word, is it?
No, enthusiastic.
All right, there you go, Bill. Enthusiastic. We have some very enthusiastic hikers, I know, listen to our program, and so we better alert them to this.
Well, certainly, I mean, a coati mundi is just one example. We've actually had more. I think the highest incident in the Tucson area with rabid animals has actually been a gray fox.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a danger to themselves and other animals and people. And so if you do see an animal that's behaving abnormally, like I said, does not seem to be afraid, foaming at the mouth, please notify us at Game and Fish so we can deal with it.
All right. Before we move on from the game and fish business, quail.
Yeah, so yesterday I spent all day at the Region 5 headquarters in Tucson. And
where is that, by the way? Where is your
head? It's out off of Greasewood, just on the kind of close to Speedway, west of the interstate.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, if you haven't ever been out there, please come out and visit the Region 5 headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
But yesterday we met with biologists from the Game and Fish Department and a couple of postdoctoral students from the University of Arizona that we have contracted to do a multi-year study on Mearns quail. You may know that we have five species of quail in this state. Three are huntable, but one of those, Mearns quail, is unique almost in this part of the United States for anywhere, where there's a small population of Mearns quail in New Mexico, a small population in Mexico, and a population in Texas, West Texas, that is not hunted.
Mm.
But we offer
probably...
How
do they look different from the regular, Tom?
We'll pull one up on the screen, a Mearns
quail.
Please, Tom.
Okay, Mearns.
So it's a beautiful, they've been called Harlequin quail. Its biological name is a Montezuma quail.
Mearns is spelled then how?
Mearns. Mearns quail. Or you might find it under Montezuma quail. Mearns is actually the subspecies name that we have here, and that's why we refer to it that way.
All right, Tom, there he goes. And he put it, it came up as Montezuma quail?
Yes.
Wow.
And that's the name of the species. The Mearns is the subspecies that we have here in southeastern Arizona.
Kind of interesting looking little animal.
Anyway, they're very unique. They don't roost in trees, only on the ground. They eat tubers more than seeds. And so we're actually working on some projects trying to figure out what's going on with the long-term population of
them. Okay. By the way, you said the Region 5 headquarters is here in Tucson, right?
Yes, sir.
But if someone did see an animal that they believe...
The best answer would be to...
You know where I'm going with this. What should people do?
So I'm going to share a...
Including those that may think have a tip on this person who apparently is poisoning animals.
Yeah. So, I think the best thing to do would be to call our Operation Game Thief hotline.
Okay.
And that's our dispatch office in Phoenix. It's the same phone number statewide. Mm-hmm. The number is 1-800-352-0700. And you can call that number to report, you know, suspected poaching, like I said, a poisoning thing.
Kind of like a hotline number.
It is. That's exactly what it is.
All right. That's good to know. And again, that's 352-0700-1800. Okay. We'll talk some national security issues from the game and fish to the big picture of some national security issues, certainly, that are in the news, the lead story on CBS at noon today. All right. We will be right back.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Nice day, 74 over midday in Silver City. They're now an hour ahead of us, so this would have been their 1 o'clock temperature. So mid-70s, great day to do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and just hanging out in historic downtown Silver City, neat Victorian architecture, really all over the place there in downtown. Their website for you take the approximately three-hour drive to Silver City is southwestnewmexico.org. We send a lot of listeners over to that area. Everybody always has a good time. And, of course, top-heavy in outdoor activities. And our guest knows a lot about outdoor activities. Retired three-star general Jeff Buchanan, who still spends a lot of time out in the wild. He's one of five commissioners for the Arizona Game and Fish Commission. Of course, the general did almost 40 years in the Army. Did you grow up doing outdoor stuff?
Oh, yeah. I grew up hunting and fishing.
Where was that?
Active in Boy Scouts here in Arizona, down mm-hmm. in Sierra Vista area.
Okay.
I worked as on a summer camp in Boy Scouts, guiding hikers in the Chiricahuas.
You did?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Back in the 70s, that camp doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. But you really do like the outdoors. In fact, so much so.
And I've been backpacking in that area that you were just talking about, Gila Wilderness.
What about that? Our great sponsor over in Silver City.
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful. Yeah. If you have never been, you need to get over to the Gila Natural.
Thank you for that plug for Silver City. But no, everybody that goes over there always has a good time. So, and it's not just Arizona. In the summer, for the past 5 years, you've gone up to Alaska.
Yeah, I work every summer as a deckhand on a charter boat fishing out of Homer, Alaska for halibut and salmon. So if you come up there and you book a trip with Captain Greg out of Homer, I will be your deckhand. I'll bait your hooks and pull your fish up and fillet your fish for you. Oh, yeah, I love it.
And what are the chances that the participants are going to get some fish?
Oh, well.
maybe too much. Huh?
Every day that I have ever gone out, we have gotten our limit on halibut.
Really?
Salmon is a little bit more iffy, depending on the run of the salmon at the time, but... Mm. And I still have a freezer full of halibut fillets and some salmon too.
Wow, and the season begins when up there?
Well, salmon is, they're king salmon in that area.
Oh, I like the king.
Kind of year round.
I like that king salmon.
But you're going to see most of the salmon in July and August, some in June.
Mm.
Halibut you could catch year round, but it can be pretty brutal after early September, just because mm-hmm. it's so cold and wet.
Is the water quite rough up there?
We're smart. We don't put ourselves or our clients at risk. But yeah.
Everybody wears like a life jacket.
No, it's not. It's only mandatory for kids that are, I think, 12 and under.
In the state of Alaska.
But offshore, when I'm on the back of the boat, when I'm on the back of the boat cleaning all those fish, everybody else is in the cabin.
Yeah.
I wear a life jacket because if you go overboard, you're just, water's 40 degrees. You're not going to last long.
No. So. All right. What do you make of what's going on in the Defense Department with that battle plans that were very specific against the Houthis and those battle plans? The battle plans were out there for not like a few hours, almost a couple of days. Folks that haven't heard it, on a unsecure, let's put it that way, chat kind of line, right?
Yeah. So obviously we never in public talk about upcoming operations or plans, and it's not so much for speculation. Obviously we want to safeguard what we're going to do because we want to protect our troops and the ability of them to accomplish their mission. So that's why we don't ever talk about that in public. What's particularly concerning about this is that this was based on a chat on an unsecure line, and we know that our adversaries, in particular the Russians and Chinese, have the ability to penetrate that and collect all that information.
So they could have conceivably had that information and then notified.
Before the operation and notified. The Houthi sponsor is Iran. Mm-hmm. And so there are connections, obviously, between China and Russia and Iran. Did any of that happen? I don't know. But it's amateurish behavior, I'll just put it that way. We don't talk about classified operations on unclassified systems. And so I've got some real concerns. I hope they learn from it and get better and don't put our troops at risk from here on out.
Mm-hmm. Operations should be conducted on the most secure.
Yes. And, you know, we have different classification systems. This, I would say, was either secret or top secret. I mean, I haven't seen it, so
no.
I don't know about the information. But obviously, social media is not what we can use to transmit that information. And to do so is actually a crime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we do have internet systems that are capable of handling classified traffic, but this was not that case.
What do you make of the overtures toward peace, put that in quotes, concerning Ukraine and Russia?
Well, obviously, I think it's in everybody's interest to end the conflict. But the question, of course, is under what sort of terms? How does it benefit Russia, who is actually the aggressor in this case? I don't know. We'll have to see what happens. What's the future of, you know, Ukraine's system of government? What's the future of their territory that was seized by Russia? So we'll have to see what the terms are. Nobody thinks that war is a good thing, least of all warriors, you know, so... Peace is a good state.
I mean,
but it would be nice to see what the terms are.
You've spent a lot of time with people shooting at you, so it's not something that warriors look forward to.
No, but you know, at the same time, this is obviously a generalization.
Okay,
I'm going to state my own opinion.
Go ahead, I'd love to hear it.
But apply it to others. But at the same time, it's an honor to serve the country, and you know, it's painful when you lose your brothers and sisters. But when they gave their life, they didn't lose their life. When they gave their life for a good cause, you know, you can feel some solace in it.
Mm-hmm. What are we learning about that war with the drones? I'm sure that at the military planning level and the military colleges like West Point, they're probably studying the way drones have become factor, right?
You know, and we've been using unmanned systems
sure.
for years and years and years.
But it's kind of being these little drones
right.
and the off-the-shelf stuff.
Yeah, and there's concern about... You know, you may not know. I think upwards of 90% of the commercial off-the-shelf drones bought in this country are manufactured in China.
No, I had no idea.
And so then the question is, okay, how much access do the if you have a off-the-shelf drone and you fly it somewhere, can the Chinese get that information on the camera that they installed?
Yeah.
And absolutely.
Wow.
And so there's a lot of concern about that. That this is not about use of drones in warfare. I'm just talking general security. I think we need to be smart about where our things are made and who might have access to that information.
That seems pretty prudent to me. All right, General Buchanan, thank you very much, and we'll get you booked here for the next visit in late April. Thank you, sir.
I do have one thing to say.
What?
It's going to be a tough order, but bear down.
Oh, about the game tomorrow.
I hope. You know, my son got his master's degree at Duke, so we will have a nice time talking about this on Thursday.
I've seen a bunch of projections that Duke has been picked by so many to win it all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, or at least be in the
finals. But let's not forget that there's only been one time in the history of the basketball tournament that a single team has beaten three number one seeds in the same tournament.
1997, when the Wildcats won the national championship. We'll see if history can repeat itself, at least with the Duke.
Oh, we're going to be cheering them on, regardless.
All right. Thanks, General. All right. On behalf of General Buchanan and Tom on the other side of the glass, Bill, wishing everybody well.